ceasefire as she starts a tour of the Middle East that includes a visit to the occupied West Bank and apartheid Israel. As the U.S. and Western world come to realize that the genocide in Gaza and their support for it is unsustainable. In less than 4 months, the nonstop Israeli bombardment of the Gaza Strip has killed more than 24,000 Palestinians and injured at least 60,000 others, thousands of them children. Joining me on this program, Charles Kelly, author, podcaster, and former counselor. And with us from Cheadle, Manchester, via Skype, is the activist Tania Manzoor. Thank you both for being here. Charles, let me start with you. The bombardment of Gaza is over 100 days old now. It's a macabre milestone. Your initial reflections on what we have been seeing?
Yeah, it's hard to believe it's 100 days already. You know, at the start, there was a lot of news coverage. Now that seems to be slipping into the second or third part of the news. I was listening to the news today, and they were not talking about it on the main headlines. But, yeah, it's obviously a human tragedy and a disaster for people, so many women and children and innocent people being affected. So, you know, the sooner we can get something done about this, the better, because it just seems like when you see the pictures of Gaza, so many of it, much of it is destroyed. It's just like it's like completely been obliterated. Mm-hmm. So my reflections are, yeah, it's a human tragedy, obviously.
It is a tragedy indeed. And Tania, the world is now awaiting that ruling at the International Court of Justice. What do you think would be the consequences of the judge's ruling against Israel and ordering its bombing of Gaza to stop?
Well, the consequences are that the U.S. and Israel are going to have to rethink their strategy because they have never thought that they are going to be able to get away with what they do. The whole of the ICJ was designed by them so that they can use this as a way of sort of formalizing how world peace and justice should work. And we've got these laws in place, and we've seen before that sometimes they apply and sometimes they don't apply. But this is the first time that Israel's been taken to this level of a trial, and it's going to be interesting what comes out from here. If they, hopefully they will be pulled up for their actions, we'll see parts of the Genocide Prevention Convention being invoked where they haven't had to think about that before. We're going to have every country member state that's member of this UN and signed into these international laws to condemn Israel for their actions and also rewrite and re-deliver how they're delivering their news locally. And we all know now that the mainstream media isn't telling the truth, so they will have to take some serious U-turns.
Now, the United Nations has called on the world to act now to end the horrifying and massive attacks against civilian housing and infrastructure in Gaza, which comes at a tremendous cost to human life. At a pro-Palestine march in London over the weekend, we spoke to British-Palestinian Dr. Ghassan Abu Sitou, who has recently returned from the coastal enclave. While he thought the Israeli regime was targeting civilian infrastructure, and also what he made a Western government scramble to support apartheid Israel in its campaign of death and destruction.
It's obvious that Israel's intention at making Gaza uninhabitable is mainly made up of a decision to completely dismantle the health system. The systematic way in which hospitals were targeted and then destroyed in the north, in which over 300 doctors and nurses were killed, in which now the hospitals in the south are being targeted, and yesterday 400 prisoners were released from Israeli prisons, and they testified to the fact that the Israeli army is torturing the 40 doctors it has taken prisoner in a way that's more vicious than any of the other prisoners. So it is obvious that Israel wants to destroy the health system, destroy health professionals, as a way of making Gaza uninhabitable. Western governments can no longer pick and choose which part of international law they want to support. They can no longer go cherry-picking Ukraine or Myanmar and not Palestine. Western governments need to listen to the British people. The British government needs to listen to the British people. People here are out in the hundreds of thousands, voicing the real wishes of the British people. The British government and the Labour Party no longer represent the wish of the British people.
Tanya, in the midst of political conversations, the overwhelming human suffering can get sidelined. Is that a fair way to look at it?
Yeah, shockingly, it can be. I mean, the Geneva Convention is a prevention law. The idea is so that when these incidents are coming into effect, we can see there's loss of life, we can see there's no access to food or water, we can see medical facilities are no longer available and functioning. That these are the signs that fit within the convention that then instigate, right, these boxes are being ticked, we need to look into that these laws are being broken. But what I don't understand is when this same case, similar cases was going on for Bosnia, they were able to invoke a temporary ceasefire straight away, and it's not happening now, and that needs to happen now. We need a ceasefire right now while these investigations are going on, which, when questioned, the Israelis have not actually shown much evidence or proof, and even the idea of questioning them is coming out like, you're being anti-Semitic by asking us, and even though we don't have the evidence and it's a valid question. That's not good enough. We need to have a ceasefire right now. People need to get the aid and the food and the water and the medical assistance they need, because there's a genuine risk of dying, and that is what this convention defines. So moves need to be made.
They certainly do need to be made. And Charles, let's talk economics. The economic toll that this Israeli genocidal campaign is taking on its own economy. A depleted workforce, businesses forced to shut. They went in with $200 billion. Then they realized they needed more. What kind of an economic impact is this having on Israel?
Well, I think it's having a severe impact. They estimate the cost could exceed $60 billion. And it must be affecting their tourism, their visitors. The whole region has been affected. They say the GDP could fall by 2.3%. And it will cost countries like neighbouring countries like Egypt and Jordan £10 billion in lost revenue. I mean, you saw on the news before Christmas, they were showing Bethlehem, which I visited before, and it was a thriving, buzzing place. Mm-hmm. And it was empty. All the shops were closed and the cafes were closed. And that's just the wider thing. But obviously, Gaza itself, it's just come to a standstill. They say there's 85% unemployment, if there is any employment. People are starving, people are hungry. But I think Israel will feel the pinch. And, you know, you could have countries boycotting, doing trade with them because of what they're doing.
Given what you said, is it fair to infer that the Israeli regime is not capable of funding a prolonged military war, a genocidal war on the Palestinians?
Well, probably on their own they're not capable. With American backing, they are. And there's an old saying that when all else fails, they take you to war. And, you know, America in its 300-year history is all but 18 years they've been at war. Apart from 18 years, they've always been at war. Britain, we've got Rishi out there in Ukraine last week. What's he doing out there? We've got enough problems here. Mm-hmm. And he's just thrown away $2 billion. So we'll give you $2 billion. I mean, they throw away a billion like it's £100. You know, a billion, £1,000,000,000, you could live on that for the rest of your life and your grandchildren could live on it. And they just throw away a billion just like that.
Rather than spending it here at home.
Yeah, and then they say there's not money for this, or the nurses, or the whatever. But I think when the economy is in problems, and America's economy, you know, they've got $33 trillion of debt, the EU have got debt, that Britain has got debt, it seems like a war is coming. And and this could escalate into another world war.
I mean, we'll talk about escalation soon. And that $1 billion, the $2 billion you talked about, I think it was the junior doctors who had asked for a pay rise, and they said it would have taken a little over £1 billion pounds to fund that wage rise, which never came. All right. This, just a quick reminder, is Gaza Under Attack with me, Saeed Pourreza, where we take a deep dive into the news of and around the Israeli atrocities against Palestinians. As we've been discussing, South Africa has gained global limelight by taking the initiative to bring Israel to justice for its genocide in Gaza. But what was Pretoria's motivation? South Africa's Minister for Justice, Ronald Lamola, addressed that question outside the International Court of Justice.
Today, it is common cause that the Rwanda genocide could have been prevented. Former UN Secretary General Kofi Annan expressly regretted this when he said, and I quote, "The international community failed Rwanda, and that must leave us always with a sense of bitter regret and abiding sorrow." Close quote. Rwanda stands out as a stern and a severe rebuke to all of us for having failed to address these interrelated matters. Let us not have to live and have the same regret when it comes to Palestine. We must stop the genocide in real time. This case presents the court with an opportunity to act in real time to prevent genocide from continuing in Gaza by issuing an injunction. South Africa is a multifaceted, multicultural, and multiracial country that embraces the concept of Ubuntu as a way of defining who we are and how we relate to others. Ubuntu means I am because you are. Since the advent of our democracy in 1994, South Africa's foreign policy has been based on what our forebears inscribed in the Freedom Charter in 1955, when they declared that, and I quote, "South Africa shall be a fully independent state, with respect the right and the sovereignty of all nations. South Africa shall strive to maintain world peace and the settlement of all international disputes by negotiations and not war." Close quote. South Africa has supported various resolutions of the United Nations and other international solutions to support a just and a lasting solution that will bring peace to Palestinians and Israelis alike. Working together with the international community and in alignment with the relevant UN resolutions and the international law, South Africa seeks to ensure a lasting and durable peace that produces a viable, contiguous Palestinian state, coexisting side by side in peace with Israel within the 1967 international recognized borders with East Jerusalem as its capital. Our president has called for a ceasefire and a humanitarian intervention on numerous occasions in international platforms. Our foreign policy is aimed at improving the well-being, safety, and prosperity of all citizens and the achievement of a better Africa and the world.
While we're in the Netherlands, people from different parts of the world flocked to The Hague in support of Palestine during the ICJ hearing. Here is what some of them had to say.
It's a really significant, important, critical moment in history for Palestinian justice, but not only for Palestinians, but also really for all of humanity, for upholding international law, for telling the world that no, there are red lines and we will adhere to them, that all life is equal, that all life matters, that humanity is to be valued and to be cherished and protected.
I think that there's a huge difference between the American people and the leaders that are representing us, because unfortunately we do have an extremely powerful Israel lobby in the States. It's the second most strongest lobby that we have in American politics. And for that reason, it does forge this extreme binary where you're either with us or you're against us. And it really eliminates a lot of the diversity of thought. It eliminates the discourse around Palestine. And outside of the States, you don't really see that. You see that there's far more discussion around the situation within the global context. So I think that right now, what you're seeing is a lot of the American public, led by youth on social media, are really shifting tides, where now, possibly for the first time since this all started, we're seeing a majority of Americans voting in favor of a ceasefire. And meanwhile, our politicians are all stringently against that. And so we're seeing this huge dissonance happening right now. It's always been there, but now it's really reached an extreme and very visible level. And I think that especially with the election coming up, now 2024 is an election year in U.S. politics, President Biden is going to have a very, very terrible time at the polls now.
We believe that we have presented, as I've said earlier, a compelling case. And we also believe that we've also made an impression to the court that the court needs to make a decision in real time and urgently, because the bombardment is continuing.
Yes.
So it will be prudent for the court to issue the injunction as urgently as is practically possible, also in a manner that will have an impact to the lives of Palestinian people as a matter of agency. Thank you.
In another sign that the bombardment of Palestinians inside Gaza is a truly global issue, Australia's foreign minister has set out on a tour of the region in an effort to prevent the conflict from spilling over and drawing in more international players. Foreign Minister Penny Wong will visit the region, where she'll meet Palestinians impacted by Israeli settler violence in the occupied West Bank, as well as others, in the hope that Australia can help to bring about an end to the violence.
The settler violence in the occupied Palestinian territories must be condemned, and we do so. And in our efforts to use our voice to advocate for a pathway out of this conflict, we have made very clear that one of the priorities must be to avoid regional escalation. I'll be visiting Israel, Jordan, the occupied Palestinian territories, and the UAE. Australia is not a central player in the Middle East, but we are a respected voice. And I'll be using our voice to advocate for a pathway out of this conflict. We all know that pathway can only be found by the parties to the conflict.
Let me start with Tania in this segment. Tania, how serious do you think is the threat of the carnage in Gaza escalating into a wider regional conflict, especially in the wake of the U.S.-led strikes in Yemen?
I think it's a very serious matter. I think it's well recognized by all onlooking countries that this is seriously something that's going to, that if something doesn't change soon, it's going to escalate soon. So it's more important now ever than before to get that ceasefire in place, to get a peace agreement. I mean, Penny here has talked about where she's going, and it's a great move to see and demonstrate her stepping in and going, come on, sides, stop. But what she fails to say is the true picture of what's really going on, which is, come on, you children of Gaza, stop killing them. You know, that's the true picture. That's not being demonstrated. And even she talks very much on the fence, but her move is excellent and definitely demonstrates that other leaders need to get more actively involved. And actually, this is what the Genocide Prevention Act actually says to every member state they need to do and demonstrate that they are doing what they can do to prevent that genocide happening. So I would be very interested to see when she visits exactly what happens, what's been said, and the response that comes after that from the other world leaders and onlookers.
Correct. Let me put the same question to Charles. If indeed this is already not a spillover, given what's happening in the Red Sea, Israeli attacks on southern Lebanon, but if this were to turn into a conflagration, as they say, in the region, I mean, how serious is that happening anyway, and what will be the dangers of that?
I think I agree, Said, and I agree with what Tania said as well. It's already starting to spill over. Shipping is now diverted from the area, so it's pushed up the price of oil. That means inflation could go up, probably will go up, and at a time when we thought we had inflation under control. But, yeah, it could escalate. We just don't know. I mean, World War One.
They're saying they're doing this in order to pile the pressure on Israel.
True.
And its Western backers to try and de-escalate, to stop the genocide. That's their motivation, as far as they have said it publicly.
And then there's been a ship hijacked, hasn't there? But, these things can escalate. World War One started with the Archduke Ferdinand and a dispute between Austria and Serbia, and he gets assassinated. And people thought, oh, it'd be a short war, 6 months, and it went on for 4 years. And you just don't know how these things can escalate. And with countries run by warmongers who seem to like wars, who knows what can happen? Mm-hmm. I mean, Biden's already fighting one war, a proxy war in Ukraine. Now he's involved here. What next? Taiwan, China? We just don't know how these things could escalate. It's a very worrying time for the world.
It sure is. Maybe I can put one very quick question to Tania, and that is the impact that the ruling against Tel Aviv by the ICJ will have on the media coverage of the carnage in Gaza, media that have hitherto minced their words instead of labeling it what it is, which is a genocide. 30 seconds.
Sorry, what's the actual question?
The media have been mincing their words, finding ways to water everything down, not calling what is happening in the Gaza Strip what it is, which is an unfolding genocide. If there is a ruling against Israel at the ICJ, how will the media globally be impacted in terms of their coverage?
Well, the coverage will have to change. But what worries me is that when they should be changing and admitting and changing terminologies and stop calling the Houthis rebels, I mean, and stop saying, you know, Iran-backed Yemen, and why do they not say, you know, US-backed UK? They don't say that. It's just a perception they create in people's minds. These things have to be changed. They have to then say, yes, there's a genocide going on. It needs to be stopped. They'll stop filming probably different MPs who actually are supporting the outcome that's come out. And there are other politicians in the UK government that are actually creating their own groups and getting ready for this to happen actually as well. But my worry and my fear is that really they'll detract the news and just put on what they want to show, which might be something to do with Prince William or something else that's just going to distract the news entirely. And even Yemen itself is a distraction. It was a response from the US when the court case didn't look like it's going to go in their favor in any way. Straight away that very night, Rishi gets a call. We need to, you know, do something all here. Right. And it's just so childish.
Okay. That's all the time we have for this segment. Big thank you to Charles Kelly and Tania Manzoor for their analysis, and to you. Join us again for the latest news and analysis on the bombardment of Gaza. Until then, continue to keep Palestine in your hearts. Goodbye.
A diverse range of programs. Youth. Spirituality. Culture. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
An Israeli minister has admitted that the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas is far from being defeated in the Gaza Strip. And the United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres has said heavy Israeli bombardment is preventing aid deliveries to Gaza. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Iran's Press TV has covered this story and tells us more. In an unexpected turn of events, the Israeli war minister has admitted that Israel has been unable to defeat the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas during its months-long war on the besieged Gaza Strip. Gideon Saar, Israel's war cabinet minister, told Israeli media on Tuesday, 16th of January, that there was no alternative to Hamas's rule, despite continued Israeli attacks on Gaza. Gideon Saar was quoted by Israeli Army Radio as saying, "Hamas is far from being defeated, and if anyone thinks that there will be an alternative to its rule in the Gaza Strip, it simply won't happen." The remarks come as Hamas's resistance to the Israeli assault continues in all parts of the Gaza Strip, despite a three-month military campaign by the Zionist regime. Dan Halutz, the former Israeli military chief, late last month hinted that the Zionist regime had lost the war against the Palestinian resistance groups in the besieged Gaza Strip. Dan Halutz also expressed concern over the future of Israel. He expressed reservation about the passage of time, saying as time passes, there is less possibility of Israeli captives returning home. Halutz back then said Israel lost the war against Hamas, stressing that the only victory to be achieved was the overthrow of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. He said, "For me, the picture of victory will be when Prime Minister Netanyahu steps down." Palestinian resistance fighters in northern Gaza Strip on Tuesday, 16th of January, confronted invading Israeli forces and launched a barrage of rockets towards settlements in the occupied Palestinian territories. The Palestinian resistance movement has launched a barrage of rockets towards Israeli settlements in the Negev Desert in retaliation for Israel's ongoing bloodshed in Gaza. Rocket sirens sounded in the Netivot settlement and surrounding towns, according to Israeli media. Palestinian resistance targeted the settlements with some 50 rockets. The reprisal operation was conducted from the central Gaza Strip. That's amid ongoing battles between resistance fighters and the invading Israeli army in northern Gaza. Intense fighting has been reported there despite the Israeli army claiming to end its operations in northern Gaza. The Israeli regime has been training its ground forces for a potential operation into southern Lebanon, according to a new report. As training of fire between Israel and the Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah continues along the border. The report on Tuesday, 16th of January, by Al Jazeera television network said Israeli forces had been holding exercises near the border with Lebanon, between the Israeli-occupied Palestinian territories and Lebanon, with the stated aim of preparing for a ground offensive into southern Lebanon, where the Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah holds sway. That came just hours after a report by Reuters news agency said Israeli military special forces had carried out a cross-border operation into southern Lebanon, a rare acknowledgement of such operations by Israel. However, sources told the Lebanon-based Al Mayadeen television network that reports about infiltration of Israeli soldiers into Lebanon were untrue. Al Jazeera's report on Tuesday, 16th of January, quoted Ori Gordin, the chief of the Israeli Army Northern Command, as saying that tens of thousands of Israeli soldiers had been deployed towards the border with Lebanon. Ori Gordin was also seen in a video published by the Israeli military whilst he was speaking to soldiers and overseeing the training in areas near the border with Lebanon. Turkey's Anadolu news agency has also covered this story. The continued stronghold of the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas in Gaza, despite Israeli attacks, is a sign that there is no alternative to its rule in the enclave, according to an Israeli minister. Israel's war cabinet minister, Gideon Saar, told Israeli Army Radio, "Hamas is far from being defeated. And if anyone thinks that there will be an alternative to Hamas's rule in the Gaza Strip, it simply won't happen." Last week, opposition leader Yair Lapid called on the ministers of the Blue and White Party, including Benny Gantz and Gideon Saar, to withdraw from Netanyahu's government in protest against his policies and the ongoing war in Gaza. However, Gideon Saar, a prominent member of the Blue and White Party who opposed the war, said, "It is important to keep the emergency government because we are still in a state of war." Israel's war cabinet minister, Gadi Eisenkot, said on Monday that Israeli authorities should stop deceiving themselves and reach an agreement to bring back the captives held in Gaza. The Israeli regime has launched a relentless air and ground offensive on the Gaza Strip since a cross-border attack by the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas on 7th of October. At least 24,285 Palestinians have been killed, many of them women and children, and 61,154 Palestinians have been injured, according to the Palestinian health authorities in Gaza. According to the United Nations, 85% of the population of the Gaza Strip is already internally displaced amid acute shortages of food, water and medicine. and 60% of Gaza's infrastructure is damaged or destroyed. Qatar's Al Jazeera television network has also covered this story and tells us more. Qatar says it has brokered a deal to bring medicine and aid into Gaza Strip in exchange for provision of medicine to captives held in Gaza. As the White House says, the United States has been involved in serious captive talks in Doha, Qatar. A family home has been blown up in an Israeli airstrike in Rafah, killing an entire Palestinian family of 12, including children, as hundreds of Palestinians have died and have been injured in overnight bombing raids. Also, the United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres has shared a post on X calling for safety of humanitarian staff delivering aid to the Gaza Strip. Antonio Guterres said, "We can't effectively deliver humanitarian aid while Gaza is under heavy, widespread and unrelenting Israeli bombardment." Earlier, Guterres told reporters that 152 United Nations staff members have been killed in Gaza since 7th of October. He said this was the largest single loss of life in the history of our organization, a heart-wrenching figure and a source of deep sorrow. The United Nations Humanitarian Agency said that there has been a significant deterioration in aid access to northern Gaza Strip since December, with only 7 of 29 planned missions to deliver food, medicine and water and other vital supplies have actually reached their destinations this year.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked among
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Very welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Muradi. Please stay tuned.
نکته‌ای که میخوام عرض کنم اینه که توی این ماه رجب بگید آقا من روزه گرفتم.
Fasting during the months of Rajab and telling others to do so is a very much significant act. Fasting and worshipping are not limited to the month of Ramadan. Worshipping and fasting during the months of Rajab is not hypocrisy. It is a preparation for the months of Sha'ban and Ramadan. Most people like to be trained spiritually, and they like to be some days away from this materialistic world.
مردم ایران خصوصا خیلی معنوی هستند. خیلی خوبن. واقعا ریابتشون میاد.
This case is true, especially about the people of Iran. Iranians like spiritual perfection and they benefit from chances like the month of Rajab and Sha'ban. We must learn not to judge the people by their outfit. A man or woman with rich outfit and neat and tidy clothing might be closer to Allah than many people who claim to be religious. The month of Rajab is a good chance for those who want to correct their look at Islam and to grow spiritually. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulema's Speech. This was the English translation of a short speech by Hojjatul Islam Moradi. To find out more about this program and other programs, log on to our website, parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Your option, our task. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. The limelight.
Tens of thousands of British people took to the streets of London on Saturday, 13th of January, in a fresh declaration of support for international efforts to force an end to Israel's brutal war in Gaza, amid signs that the conflict might spread to Yemen. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The website of The New Arab has covered this story and tells us more. A Britain-based advocacy group has filed a lawsuit against senior British politicians for their complicity in Israel's war crimes against Palestinians of the Gaza Strip. The International Center of Justice for Palestinians, the ICJP, said on Tuesday, 16th of January, that it handed its evidence dossier to the Metropolitan Police's War Crimes Unit recently. The International Center of Justice for Palestinians named several British ministers and lawmakers, charging them with aiding and abetting Israeli war crimes through their continued military support for Israel. The document provided evidence that British weaponry and intelligence are used in operations that fail to respect the principles of distinction and proportionality and target civilians. Tayyip Ali, director of the International Center for Justice for Palestinians and head of the international law at Weidmann's LLP, said, "This is just the first tranche of our evidence and the first list of suspects. We will add further offenses and further categories of suspects, including commentators who continue to support war crimes in Gaza." Tayyip Ali said that each account not only serves as evidence, but also as a solemn reminder of the human cost of this conflict. Tayyip Ali said that the rights group will demand a thorough and impartial investigation into these charges. The group's 78-page complaint features photographic evidence as well as harrowing eyewitness accounts, including from British citizens who were either present in Gaza or have family members there. One witness gave an account of his former primary school teacher who was martyred alongside 20 relatives in their family home in northern Gaza, leaving no survivors. Another eyewitness said that his friend's brother, who is doctor at Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza, only learned that his wife and three children had attained martyrdom when he found their bodies in the hospital's corridors. The dossier also includes evidence supporting reports that the Zionist regime's military is using white phosphorus against the population of Gaza, one of the most densely populated areas of the world. According to Human Rights Watch, the use of white phosphorus in crowded civilian areas creates a high risk of excruciating burns and lifelong suffering. The use of white phosphorus is restricted under international humanitarian law. It must never be fired at or in close proximity to a populated civilian area or civilian infrastructure due to the high likelihood that the fires and smoke it causes spread. Such attacks, which fail to distinguish between civilians and civilian objects and fighters and military objectives, are indiscriminate and thus prohibited. The British government is obligated under its own arms export laws to suspend arms export licenses if it determines that there is a clear risk that British weaponry might be used in violations of international law. Nevertheless, Britain's Prime Minister Rishi Sunak told Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in October that his government will stand with Tel Aviv in solidarity as we stand with your people and we want you to win. The governments of United Kingdom, the United States and the European Union member states have been providing the Israeli regime with weaponry and military assistance since Israel launched its brutal war on Gaza on 7th of October. In the meantime, four British arms factories supplying components for the F-35 stealth fighter jets used by Israel to bomb the Gaza Strip have been temporarily shut down by hundreds of workers and demonstrators protesting against the Israeli regime's genocide in Gaza. Video footage posted online recently showed activists blocking the entrances into the factories. The factories are Eaton Mission Systems in Bournemouth, BAE Systems at Somsbury Aerodrome in Lancashire, and L3 Harris Factory in Brighton, East Sussex, and the BAE Systems Govan site in Glasgow, Scotland. The Middle East Eye has also covered the same story and tells us more. British lawmakers have called on London to halt the current flow of arms exports to the occupied Palestine because of the Israeli regime's brutal war crimes against Palestinians of the Gaza Strip. The Gaza Strip has been under intense Israeli bombardment for over 3 months now. Speaking in a House of Commons debate recently, more than a dozen legislators stressed that the British government must no longer send arms to Israel, asking London whether it knows how the occupying regime is using British weaponry, as they fear Britain's complicity in atrocities and war crimes being committed by Israel in Gaza. Labour MP John McDonnell, who also asked whether spare parts for F-16 fighter jets and F-35 fighter jets used in the bombing had been shipped to the occupied Palestine, asked, "Do the government know whether British weapons or military equipment are being used in Gaza or not?" The British government is obligated under its own export laws to suspend arms export licenses if it determines that there is a clear risk that British weaponry might be used in violations of international laws. Labour MP John McDonnell asked for the suspension of arms transfers to the occupied Palestinian territories and undertaking a complete review, like similar measures London made during the wars in Gaza in 2009 and 2014, to see exactly how what we have supplied is being used and whether it's being used in Gaza, because if it is, we have become complicit in war crimes. John McDonnell stressed that many questions he posed came from a letter sent by several UK-based civil society organisations to the government recently, urging for an immediate end to British arms exports to Israel. Independent MP Angus Brendan McNeill said, "Should we not be able to expect more companies in the United Kingdom, and that they will not be like immoral drug dealers on the corner, selling to whoever, whenever, regardless of the consequences?" MP Angus Brendan stressed, "We expect companies that live among us in the United Kingdom not to be funding or aiding and abetting death in Gaza, as is happening at the moment." Also, tens of thousands of Britons have taken to the streets of London on Saturday, 13th of January, in a fresh declaration of support for international efforts to force an end to Israel's brutal war in Gaza, amid signs that the conflict is now spreading to Yemen. People from all walks of life and representing various religious and ethnic communities gathered in the Bank Junction in central London to start marching towards the Parliament Square, where many British government offices are located. The protesters chanted slogans demanding an immediate ceasefire in Gaza, where the Israeli regime has massacred tens of thousands of innocent people since early October.
Hidden files. Hello and welcome to Hidden Files. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. I'm very happy to be joined by a very special guest today. That's Rabbi Weiss from the United States, an anti-Zionist. And we're going to be talking about the latest situation to be taking place in Gaza and occupied Palestine. So stay with us.
Rabbi Yisrael David Weiss is an American Haredi Jew and former spokesman of the anti-Zionist Jewish group, Netori Karta. He was born in 1956 to European parents and lost most of his family members during the Holocaust. He rejects the use of the Holocaust as a justification for the occupation of Palestine. He also dismisses Zionism as a political agenda that goes against the teachings of the Jewish religion. And he will join us on Hidden Files with more on the topic.
Well, Rabbi Weiss, it's such a pleasure to be talking to you again. Of course, I've known you for years now. I want to start with October 7th, because we have seen from that time on what is taking place, this genocide that is taking place in Gaza. So you have been very active, especially since that time. Why?
Well, with the help of the Almighty, I pray that He should give me His words, that I may be worthy of conveying His message and sanctify His name and bring peace to the world, inshallah. Well, because this terrible Nakba, this tragedy, this horrific, colossal tragedy that's happening, unfolding in front of our eyes every minute. This is not something that started October 7th, obviously. It started since the beginning of the occupation, over 75 years already. And basically, it's inhumane. People say, we say it's ungodly, the occupation of a good people, of a beautiful people, to steal the land, to occupy, to simply to oppress and so forth. But to us, it's a double tragedy, a double Nakba, because it is being done under the name of Judaism with the excuse that this is two issues. It's a religious conflict between Muslims and Jews, and that it is that the Palestinians are being vilified as people who are occupying a land that belongs to the Jewish people. And they're refusing simply to let the Jews live there. And so it's the vilification of the Palestinians with the self-righteous excuse called anti-Semitism. This is all patently false. It is repulsive, repugnant, very hurtful for us to hear it. It's being done in my name, the name of my religion. They use the Star of David, the name Israel. My religion is subservience to God. That is, Judaism is subservience to God. It's a religion of 3,000 years. We made a covenant with God 3,000 years ago when we accepted God's Torah to be subservient, not to kill, not to steal, to show kindness. Just as God is compassionate, you should be compassionate. And therefore, around the world, when Zionism started in Europe, mind you, not in Palestine, the rabbis, all as one, stood in total opposition. We even put out a publication, The Rabbis Speak Out, which is a compilation of all the major rabbis. I mean, there were tens of thousands of rabbis, but this is the major ones, all of them together with the all the other rabbis, but these are the major voices. They all said in their style, each according to their style, that they are opposing, totally opposing this movement, this ideology that started a little over 100 years ago, that states that we are a nationalism, that we have a land, and that's what Judaism is, a transformation from subservience to God into base nationalism. And they proudly announce they're a democracy, meaning that you're not obligated to serve God. They're taking God out of the equation. It's a freedom, just a movement, and therefore they have a right, and they have a land. But they, at the same time, they conflate Judaism with it and say, "Oh, God gave us the land of Palestine." So what they're doing is, in the name of my religion, waving the Bible as an excuse to have the land and vilifying anybody who's standing in the way.
Well, let's start there, because you said that many rabbis stood up against this. So. What happened? How did all of a sudden this nationalist movement, as you said, this Zionism in itself, come to try to represent now Jews themselves, Judaism, and then we have the entity called Israel that they're trying to say is a Jewish state?
Right. Well, as I say, it was this movement started maybe like a half hundred years after a movement called Reform Judaism, that they're going to change Reform Judaism. And again, that was a movement that started like 300 years ago. And this was a movement that states God didn't give the Torah. Moses created some religion. And we are therefore free to pick and choose. So they don't keep the Ten Commandments, and they don't keep the Sabbath, they don't kosher. So this movement started, their grandchildren basically, people who are totally non-religious, came along and said, well, what the Reform wanted to assimilate into the communities by simply dropping the religion. So complicated issues. But they came along and they said, well, assimilating, dropping the religion is not doing what we want. That people should stop being anti-Semitic, hating the Jews. The thing to do is to create our own state. Now, but the problem is that the Judaism, the whole Jewish communities that were in Europe, that were God-fearing, so we can't create a state. We're in exile for 2,000 years.
According to the Torah.
According to the Torah. We're clearly forbidden to create a state, even on an uninhabited land. So these guys just laughed and scorned. And then they said, they're rooted in blasphemy because they said, well, so what do you do? Who's protecting you? So we said, what do you mean God? We're religious. We believe in God. That's what religion is. So they said, where was God to protect you? So they scorn and laugh and mock the religious Jews. We're going to make a state that's to protect us. So these were a bunch of heretics, non-religious Jews, and they don't have the morals of God that states that you should not try to covet what's not yours. So they're using the identity of Jews maliciously, knowing it's not their identity.
So basically what you're saying is that the entity called Israel is totally against Judaism. It goes against Jewish law, goes against the Torah.
Totally contradictory. And first, in the issue that we are subservient to God, that's what religion is, to be subservient to God. They are transformation to nationalism. They believe, they state clearly that God's not protecting us. They laugh that God's powerless, God forbid. And therefore, we should have a state to protect us. So it's rooted in blasphemy and heresy. Secondly, we're in exile for 2,000 years. We're forbidden to make a state. God foresaw there will be people who want to make such a thing. So we're forbidden to have such a Jewish sovereignty anywhere on the world, and certainly not in Palestine.
Okay.
And even though we suffered the Inquisition, so the Jews never attempted to make their own state. On top of that, there was the Muslim communities, the Muslim world, who took in the Jews and embraced us by the Inquisition, for this 1,000 years
Talk about that. Let's talk about that, because basically what you're saying then is it was the Europeans who always oppressed the Jews, and we look at the Muslims in Islamic countries who actually took the Jews in. We look at Palestine itself, because I remember talking to another rabbi, a friend of yours, Rabbi Feldman, years ago. And what he said is that, I believe he himself, that he had grown up in Palestine, or his family had, and that they lived on side of Muslims. They lived together, they socialized together. So let's talk about that Palestine prior to 48. What was it like for the Jews who were in Palestine?
Right. Well, here's a picture of how Jews lived in Muslim lands. This is in Palestine, actually. So we lived together in total harmony. As I said, Muslims took us in, even though we have a distinctly different religion, but it was never an impediment of coexistence. So we were living together. And the only change that created this rift and the mistrust and the bloodshed is the introduction of this political Zionism, not 1948, around maybe 50 years before. Zionism started encroaching on the Holy Land. When this started, there was, at the beginning, the Palestinian, the Arab, the Muslim, the Christian Palestinian people, they had no problem selling Jews land and giving, because they knew the Jews for hundreds of years. We lived together. But then all of a sudden they realized that the people that are buying, that's coming from Europe, is a group of people that want, that have a plan to take over the land. So then that's when the problem started, and there was the attacks. And so the attacks, meaning that the Zionists attacked Deir Yassin and whatever, all the different areas. So all the strife and the problems is from this introduction of something, not the religions, but a political movement that caused bloodshed. And again, I was telling you who they are, it's good to see a picture of who the Zionists are. This is not a religious movement. These were a political movement.
I'll get the pictures from you because I want to show it closer.
So they were
non-religious.
This was a group of purely political that they clearly announced they're a democracy. They're not God-fearing. And as I say, it's clearly I was saying, besides that we're not allowed to steal or kill or have our own land, we are supposed to show gratitude for good that has been done to us. What the Muslims took us in, and it's clearly they're not what they call anti-Semitic. They're Semites also, but clearly they're not against Jews. So it's only a Zionist narrative in order to explain their occupation and that they're up that the
well,